Hi, and welcome once again to Practically Speaking. My name is Lane Jones, and I want to thank you for joining us for this informal discussion with the management team of North Point Ministries. Today's segment continues a series on the seven practices of effective ministry. These seven practices form the basic operating system for how we do ministry here at North Point. Today we'll discuss practice number six, replace yourself. I'm joined by Andy Stanley and the Director of Family Ministry for North Point, Reggie Joyner.
Andy, explain to us this concept of replacing yourself.
Replacing yourself is basically what it says. It's taking a responsibility that you own and handing it off to somebody else so that they not only do what you do, but they feel like they own what you've owned. But there's an irony about replacing yourself, because the truth is all of us will be replaced, and we will either replace ourselves intentionally or we will be replaced unintentionally. And so, sometimes when we talk about this, people push back because they feel like they're giving up something, losing control, losing status in the organization. But the truth is, all of us will be replaced, and we can do that in a way that furthers the success of the organization, or we can simply be replaced because we're just not there anymore.
And one of the other things that we have discovered about the idea of replacing yourself that has been critical to our organization is the way it affects volunteerism. You and I both know that one of the most important aspects of a church that sets the church apart from any other organization almost in our culture is the need that we have for volunteers to fuel what we do. And whenever we're with other churches, the number one and the number two question we always get, and it's answered actually by the concept of replace yourself, is how do you get volunteers, number one, because there always seems to be a shortage. And number two, how do you make sure that the volunteers you have are quality volunteers? And we've discovered over the past few years that when we and where we implement the replace yourself strategy, we answer both of those questions. When we fail to, we end up with problems in our volunteer force.
The fact that one day we will all be replaced really should drive us to embrace this concept, because, you know, if I replace myself intentionally and I'm still there to watch somebody do what I used to do, then I get to enjoy the process. But if I'm replaced simply because I can't do what I used to do very effectively, then it's a negative thing. So again, all of us are going to be replaced. Senior pastors, education directors, music leaders, volunteers at every level, we will all be replaced someday. But to participate in the process is a win for everybody. But oftentimes we talk to people who are hesitant to replace themselves, but at the same time ask the questions, how do we get more volunteers? And the answer to how do you get more volunteers is you get every volunteer and staff member to buy into the concept of replacing themselves. Because replacing yourself is personal. Just getting volunteers is very impersonal. And we'll talk more about that later in our discussion.
And Reggie, there are some organizational structures that really prevent us from being able to do this well.
Well, actually, you know, I know years ago we read a book by John Maxwell where he talks about leadership lids and how far a leader can actually grow and those who grow underneath him. I actually think sometimes in our personalities as leaders, we have leadership walls because we want to do hands-on, or for a number of reasons, because we're threatened, because there's insecurities. There are all these kinds of reasons why we will keep people out and literally not allow them to develop. And one of the greatest things I think we can do as leaders is come to the place where we understand in the context of the replace yourself that we have a lot of people sitting in the wings, a lot of people that are coming along behind us that we have to break out of our personality styles to enable them to begin to grow and develop.
And to do that, we have to hand off ministry, but not in the sense of delegation, but in the sense of saying, you know what, I think you can do what I do and possibly better than I do it, and I am willing to step out of this slot in the organization or step out of this role if you will step in. In other words, my goal is to replace yourself. And so we say to our leaders all the time, you know, success in ministry isn't simply doing the task. Success in ministry is finding somebody else and helping to train them to do it better than you do. That's really success.
Another thing that I think is important to recognize is what we said at the beginning of this, that the idea of this practice, just like any of the other practices, requires some intentionality. We have to be intentional. We have to be deliberate about replacing ourselves. It's something we have to think about. It's something we have to concentrate on. It's something we have to learn about ourselves and those around us. Because the gravitational pull in my life, I know, because of my style of leadership sometimes, is just to do it myself, to figure out how to make it happen, and to literally think about who I can hand it off to hand it off and allow maybe the quality not to be what I think it should be, or at least for it not to look like I should think it should look. I think sometimes goes against my nature. So I have to push myself down a road to replace myself, or it will never happen.
Reggie, we said earlier that a lot of people hesitate to do this because they just don't want to give up their spot. They don't want to give up their position. But there are some real legitimate fears involved in replacing yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I was in the hallway just a little earlier talking with one of our production directors for Upstreet, Mandy, and she was talking about how she had just pushed an intern into the spotlight to make a presentation Bible story on Sunday morning. And we had this great conversation about how this intern, they coached her, they worked with her, and she got on the stage, and she did a great job. She probably did not do the job that one of our seasoned staff did. But for the children in that moment, we have to create platforms and we have to create opportunities where they can develop, or we will one day wake up because we've cast this leadership shadow and nothing has grown underneath it. And I think that requires of us in a number of different ways as leaders to look at opportunities where we can push people and be okay if they don't quite get there the first time. I think of guys like Clay Scroggins, who's a communicator, who, you know, Kevin Ragsdale years ago when he was in college would push him in front of the students. And you know, recently he stood up in front of our entire Grow Up conference in front of 2,000 or 3,000 people, and they almost gave him a standing ovation. But if you heard Clay when he first spoke, you would think, I'm not sure he's going to get there. The problem is sometimes we don't see the potential because we're afraid we're going to lower the bar too far in excellence. But sometimes we have to lower the bar in order for people to develop.
Sometimes you do have to move back to move forward. There's no doubt about it. One of the other advantages of embracing this concept is as leaders, it allows us to do less. One of the things we've talked about is that you accomplish more by doing less. The fewer things I do, the more I accomplish. In order to back out of some responsibilities, in order to back out of some tasks, the only way to do that is to hand that off, which means I have to replace myself. And as we'll talk about a little bit later, part of this concept is, as Reggie, you just alluded to, you raise the bar by putting the expert in there. That sets the standard. In other words, this is the standard we're trying to get to. But in order for me to be able to focus on fewer and fewer things, I have to hand that off. So it's sort of a twofold process. I set the standard by doing it myself. I hand off ministry so I can do less, but now that the standard has been set, whoever I replace myself with knows the standard they're working towards. So with Clay, for example, Clay walked into our student ministry. The bar was set high with our other communicators, so it wasn't a matter of saying, well, this is Clay and this is the best that Clay can do. Clay knew where the bar was, but because we put him in that slot, it gave him the opportunity to work himself to the point where he became an excellent communicator. So replacing ourselves is not about lowering the standard. It's about putting up with less than optimal performance in order to get somebody to the standard, and therefore we've replaced ourselves.
And it's very possible if you would look around at your organization and be honest, you would see the unhealthy signs that are there of staff or people who haven't bought into the idea of replacing themselves. It's the preachers who will not let the people come behind them and speak, who always have to be in the platform or always have to be the speaker, the keynote speaker. It's the decisions that are only made at the highest level of the organization because you're making too many decisions. It's the same singers that are always featured. You know, it's the staff who routinely works late because they're not willing to hand off something, so they're working extra hours instead of, again, broadening the base of leadership and allowing others to grow as well.
It's the pastor who feels like he has to go to every meeting, who cannot hand off the decision-making process to another team or another person. Or as Reggie alluded to, I remember my dad for years saying that when he was gone, he wanted to bring somebody in who was better than he was. And he talked about his friends or other pastors he knew who would never do that. They wanted to bring in somebody that would make him look good. So instead of making the priority feeding people and, you know, having the best message there could possibly be, to bring in somebody who they would say, oh, we're glad you're back, Pastor. Because so, you know, the whole idea of handing off ministry and replacing yourself, it really allows us as leaders to do fewer things and to engage more people in ministry, but there is an ego check. There's a threatening element to this. But ultimately, everybody wins, and the organization wins, and the kingdom wins.
There's just really a powerful thing that happens when there is a mindset across the staff that's willing to push other people into the spotlight and see them be successful and see them win. That does something to the organization that I can't even explain, but it is just across the board. I had someone ask me recently, do you sense competition in your organization among the speakers or the singers? And most of the time, I do not sense any competition because everybody's rooting for whoever gets out there, whoever gets on the platform, because we want them to win, because when they win, the organization wins. And I think that mindset has to be something that filters down at every level of the organization.
We saw a great example of this last summer during one of our camps. Tell them about that, Reggie.
Yeah, we had a camp in Panama City, and one of the featured singers is a young lady named Christina Fincher, who is just unbelievable. When she gets in front of an audience, I mean, the kids just connect. She engages them in worship. We had a young girl who's been on staff for a couple of years who had been wanting to break into leading worship, and we signed her up to go to camp. Well, Christina not only put her on the stage, but Christina, which I think is a mark of an incredible leader, handed her all of her solos and all of her key songs to sing on the stage. And there was this one moment where Christina, I remember sitting there watching, where Christina sort of stepped back, Selena stepped out, she sang the song that Christina had been singing, and the kids just absolutely gave her a standing ovation. And I could see Christina on the sideline smiling.
Yep, she just lit up. And in that moment, she just applied this principle. She had replaced herself and saw it as a win, not as a threat. And that's a sign of mature leadership. And again, everybody wins.
Right, and it's one of those things that as leaders we see, and Christina will never want for opportunities and for positions of leadership,
right,
because we see that in her.
You cannot have too many people in your organization who are willing and committed to replace themselves because they're multipliers. And you can't have too many multipliers, especially in volunteer ministry and at any level in an organization.
The way we say that all the time is we want to applaud those who applaud others.
That's right.
Andy, you just said how important it is to be committed to multiplying at every level of the organization. Reggie, we've seen how important that is really all the way down to our volunteers.
Absolutely. You know, if you're a staff member, you have a choice. Let's say you need 100 volunteers. You can either go out and try to find 100 volunteers, or you can go out and find 10 great volunteers who will each find 10 volunteers. And along the way in our organizations, I just have been in so many churches through the years, I just remember the pleas in front of a congregation. You know, we need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Well, once you really begin to implement a replace yourself mentality, what you've literally done is you have added to the job description of every volunteer this one responsibility of at least finding another volunteer. I remember walking into leadership teams at the beginning of our church when we were first starting, thinking we need a lot of people to pull this off, but I don't even know people. I don't even know who we can tap into. And I remember one specific leadership meeting, I walked in and I handed everybody a white card, and I said, here's your job, to write down one or two names of people you know can help us do this and go find them. Once you were doing that, you were leveraging your influence in the right way in the organization.
Every volunteer needs to see themselves as a recruiter, not just showing up to do a task on Sunday morning or Wednesday night or Tuesday night, but every volunteer needs to understand, I'm not only doing ministry, I'm recruiting people for ministry. And now you've multiplied your recruiters. And the value that drives that is part of your job description is replace yourself. You know, Reggie mentioned how many times he's heard pastors get up and plead for volunteers. And one of the things that we've learned, and I'm sure those of you listening to this have discovered this yourselves, when you make a plea from the platform for volunteers, you get the same kind of people over and over. You get the person that responds to a public plea for help. But you don't get great leaders because leaders are recruited one by one. They just don't respond to a general plea. In fact, a really sharp leader hears a plea for help as an admission of failure. In other words, we have failed to recruit the volunteers we need to. Please come join our failing, fledgling organization. And great leaders just don't want to be a part of that. But when a volunteer who's excited about what they're doing says to a friend, you've just got to come with me on Sunday morning and watch. You've got to sit with me on Sunday morning and listen. Then they're far more likely to participate and possibly get engaged in ministry. That's what it means to replace yourself.
And not only are they more likely to get engaged in ministry, they're more likely to stay in ministry. If I recruit them in a mass effort, they're going to sign up. But when the pressure gets, you know, tough and when it gets difficult, they may back out. But if their friend has asked them to come help them, they're going to stick in a way that they wouldn't stick the other.
There's a relational connection that solidifies their commitment not only to that specific ministry but to that specific person. But again, all that starts with a mentality, with embracing this value of, you know, I'm here to do ministry, but my goal is to look over my shoulder and see somebody coming along behind me. My goal is to look through the window of that classroom and see somebody I recruited in there doing what I did at one time.
Years ago, we had only been in the church for about 2 or 3 years, and one of our biggest needs, I think, which is probably true in every church, is just making sure we have the force that we need for preschool. And we had worked very hard to just get as many people as possible to sign up. And I think we had nearly 400 people sign up to help with preschool for that year. Well, when the summer rolled around, we were having our retreat with our preschool director, our preschool staff, and they said we had some volunteer issues. And I remember saying, well, what do you mean we have volunteer issues? I thought we recruited 400 people. They said, yeah, but we don't know where they are. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, most of them have sort of disappeared. They just weren't as committed as they needed to be. And oftentimes I hear people say that they just weren't as committed. And I remember in that context, we began pushing around to figure out, okay, what happened here? And someone asked a question, and this is an important question. Well, where is preschool working and where is the volunteer force happening the right way? And one of the directors said, well, in this room and in this room and this room. And I said, what is the common factor there? And the common factor in each one of those rooms was a leader who had recruited their own leaders. And all of a sudden, we recognized that instead of recruiting 400 people, we needed to make sure we had 20 or 30 really good people who had this mindset, or we would not continue to find the people we need, nor would we continue to keep the people we need.
And it's amazing to me, watching our preschool ministry, how many people have been in there for 6, 8, 10 years, week after week, Sunday after Sunday, doing what is a very difficult thing, and yet they have stuck.
You get the right leader in the room with this mindset, and they really believe this, it will solve a lot of your volunteer issues.
And when you have a volunteer who constantly says, I need help, I need help, I need help, they're saying to the staff, go get me help, then you have a volunteer that doesn't understand this concept. And before we blame people for not being committed, we've got to look in the mirror and ask the question, have I led my people to embrace the concept of replacing themselves? And if not, we really just have ourselves to blame.
It's like Andy said a while ago, you need to make an invitation to a certain group of people. You need to go find the people that you know can inspire, find the people that you know can influence, and you go after the 10, 15, or 20 that you know can do that. You get them on board and then turn them loose to replace themselves.
Another word we use to reinforce the idea of replacing yourself is the word apprenticing. And that's a word that's not used a lot in our culture anymore, but we talk a lot about intentional apprenticing. And it's simply the same thing. It's saying, hey, come watch me, come help me, come do what I do. Now I want to watch you do what I used to do. It's sort of, you know, it's a simple thing. But intentional apprenticing is different than just trying to go get a bunch of volunteers. It's saying, again, as we've said before, I want to invite you to watch me do what I do. Now I want you to help me do what I do. Now I want to watch you do what I did. Now you're on your own. And voila, I have replaced myself.
And apprenticing really answers the issue of quality in an organization. One of the things sometimes, as we discussed earlier, that people get concerned about is the issue of quality and will the bar stay high and will we continue to have excellence in what we do. For example, whether it's a technical issue, whether it's a singer issue or an artist issue, we want people coaching people to a certain level and to a certain standard, especially when we get to the small group model. When we get to the small group model and we're actually trusting a leader with a spiritual direction of people's lives, where they're teaching them and pouring into their life spiritually, we want to make sure that they have been seasoned and that they have actually, you know, been groomed and equipped in techniques of being able to teach them and lead them.
One of the other advantages of handing off ministry, replacing yourself, apprenticing leaders, is that it assures quality. Because as I mentioned before, when someone watches someone who does something well, that sets the standard. So when you bring somebody else in, essentially the standard has been set, and then you need to coach the person to the standard. And where this is extremely important is in the small group. In our small groups, there's always the concern that somebody's going to go off on a tangent, or either theologically or in terms of an application. So there's always the issue of how do you control what happens in small groups. And if you've replaced yourself, and if the process of intentional apprenticing is really happening, it lessens the concern.
What that looks like typically in our church is every leader of a small group has an apprentice leader with them, a co-leader. And they get to watch that co-leader work and watch them develop so that when it comes time for that group to divide, the group divides and this leader has been seasoned and basically has been evaluated, and they can lead the next group effectively. And that's extremely important when it comes to teenagers and children, because you want to be able to watch how someone connects with kids. You want to be able to watch how they're able to translate and engage teenagers. And I think that sometimes we put people in leadership without being able to evaluate them, and we find out too late in the game that they're not doing a good job you know, in connecting with teenagers or kids. And that's a very, very bad place to be. You want to be able to ultimately watch them before you actually hand ministry off to them.
If a person has a personality issue or a methodology issue or a theological issue, it will surface while they're being apprenticed, if they're being apprenticed correctly. And this is what we've seen, that over a series of weeks or even months, if there's an issue, it'll surface. And the last thing we want to do is simply hand somebody some information or a lesson and say, here, go fill this slot. But when you get to the place where you're having to stand up on Sunday morning and say, please, would anybody please volunteer? You're going to end up sending untrained and unmentored and unapprenticed people into environments where, you know, there's an initial sense of relief, oh, we've got somebody in there, but where you have no idea what's happening in those classrooms. And again, everybody listening to this, we've all got stories. And so replacing yourself, apprenticing, addresses that issue.
And what we believe is critical at the small group level, we practice at every level. I think it's important to remember that apprenticing, replacing yourself, happens with the technical crew. It happens with all the production crew. It happens, you know, with our artists and singers. I mean, at every level, we have to practice this principle, or ultimately, we will not have the volunteers or the kind of volunteers that we need.
Whenever I talk about apprenticing, one of the pushbacks is, but Andy, I'm not an expert. I mean, I don't have anything to give or to offer, and that's just not true. And one of the things that helped me is when I realized my responsibility is not to be an expert at anything. My responsibility is never to have all the answers for any component of ministry. My responsibility is to pour into other people what I do know, and then they have the opportunity to go find out what I don't know and they don't know from somebody who does know. And I guess the simple way of saying that is my responsibility is not to fill your cup. My responsibility is to empty my cup. And so when a person understands that, it takes all the pressure off. So a preschool leader doesn't need to feel like, gosh, I can't apprentice somebody. I'm still learning myself. That's okay. We are all learners, and we are always learning. And so, again, the goal isn't to get people to the place where they feel like, I'm such an expert, I'm now qualified to apprentice. That's not it at all. It's simply to bring somebody along, teach them what you do know, so they can go discover what you don't know.
I actually think, you know, Lane, that Andy's a good illustration of that, because you and I can both remember the days in which he played a guitar and he was a musician. But think about this. You know, Todd Fields came along. You know that story? Todd Fields came along and you got him involved in music. You taught him what you knew.
Yeah. I was there when Todd was leading worship for our high school ministry, and Sandra and I would sit in the back and go, oh, we got to get somebody else to do this. This just isn't working. And, you know, now he's one of our premier worship leaders, and he certainly passed me years ago in terms of his ability to lead worship.
I think he knows a few more chords than you do now.
Yeah, I don't even play anymore. But you know what I did for Todd? And Todd and I talk about this. I simply gave Todd an opportunity. I said, here's all I know. Now you go and do it. And, you know, he skyrocketed in terms of his talent and ability. And every time I see Todd lead worship, there's a part of me that says, wow, I had a tiny part of that. And that is the value. That's the win of replacing yourself and handing off opportunities.
Okay, guys, then practically speaking, how do we do this? How do we hand off? How do we replace ourselves?
Well, there are three steps that we try to apply here in our organization. One is break it down. You've got to have a clear understanding of what you do and why. You have to make sure that each job is broken down, literally, into steps, into a system that can be easily communicated and explained.
It needs to be written down and scripted. So it's not just a general sense of here's what I do, but specifically, here's what I know I'm to accomplish in this environment, so this is what you would need to accomplish. And that's not 40 pages. That's oftentimes one page with some bullet points.
One of the things that we have done recently to break it down that has been really huge for us in family ministry started, you know, a couple of years ago, and we started having conversations about how we communicate. And what Andy does intuitively, I think, in second nature, he's never sat down and thought about, okay, what do I go through? What is that process? How does that feel? What does that look like? And what is the anatomy of a message? And by simply putting some structure to that, and writing some terms and phrases down, we've been able, for the Clay Scroggins of the world and some of these younger communicators, sit down with them in a room and go, okay, here's a process to help you prepare a message so you can be effective at communicating.
Yeah, and it really came down to, Andy, your willingness to being watched, to having a group of people sit around and talk with you, number one, but then also to watch you do what you do and to break that down and to be able to record what you do intuitively and to really get a system down.
Because we think sometimes, we don't need to write this down. We don't need to script this. There's no real reason we need to do that. But what we don't remember is the group coming behind us one day when we're not here may not intuitively go down those same roads. And at least to hand them something to help them improve even is critical for us as an organization to succeed.
And within your organization, if you're listening to this, there are some people who are incredible teachers with children, some incredible small group leaders for your students, some incredible leaders with your preschool ministry. And you would be so wise to figure out what is it they do that makes them so good. And I'll tell you this, they don't know. They can't tell you. They just, it's so natural to them. They don't know. And one of the greatest things you could do is to get them in a room and just pound them with questions to dig out what is it they do so well and so naturally. Script that and then train all your other leaders.
We have even gone as far as to videotape some of that, like for a worship leader in our children's ministry, to videotape a worship leader to draw out the specific characteristics that help them engage the children. So then we can sit with other worship leaders and say, now watch what they do here and watch what they do here, and here are the principles if you're going to get on a stage and engage kids that you have to know.
All right, that's step one. Break it down. What's step two?
Well, the second thing you have to do is you have to hand it off. You have to be intentional again about giving it away. And again, you can't see the people around you as competition. You know, we're not running a race against each other. We're running a race with each other. And it's like a marathon, and we have to encourage each other along the way. And you have to be willing to hand it off to them to let them be pushed into the spotlight to shine.
And this is different than having somebody fill in for you. And I think in ministry oftentimes, you know, I'm not going to be here next week, so Joe's going to teach the lesson. That's not what we're talking about. I'm going to be here next week, and Joe's going to teach the lesson while I'm here. Joe's not filling in. Joe is replacing me. That's very, very different. And so I think even as pastors, you know, when I bring staff in to preach for me, when I'm in town, I'm sitting on the front row, and I usually sit through all three services because they're not filling in for me. They're replacing me, and I want to be a part of the process. And so what that means is that your seasoned Sunday school teacher who never, ever, ever misses, while they're there, need to watch some other people teach their class, not because they're on vacation, but because they're replacing themselves. And that's very different because the fill-in mentality doesn't get you there. Replace yourself means I'm there to coach you and to applaud you when you're finished.
Absolutely. And expect the people that you hand this off sometimes to drop a ball or to make some mistakes and be okay with that. You have to have a mindset to expect the people you hand things off not to do it exactly the way you did it or not to do it perfectly. You need to even expect them sometimes to make mistakes. Mistakes are great training ground, and we have to be able to leverage that as an opportunity to help them continue to grow and win. People want to win, and ultimately, given enough time and enough experience, they will. But you have to be willing to risk that in the process.
And mistakes have no value if there's not someone there to coach a person through their mistake. That's why simply having somebody fill in for someone has no value at all. Somebody has to be there to debrief afterwards. And again, when you listen to this, you're probably picturing that we have some very, very sophisticated system. It's not that at all. You know what it is? It's simply everybody in the organization understanding that their ultimate goal in ministry is not a lesson well taught or a car well parked. It's somebody there to do it when you're not there. And once your volunteers understand this, they know how to coach. They know how to talk to somebody afterwards. They know how to debrief. They know how to say, you know what, that didn't work. Generally, the person who's, you know, being apprenticed knows it didn't work. So there's no sophisticated system. It's really just buying into this value.
Absolutely. And then last of all, you have to let it go. You have to come to the place where you literally will allow them to run, allow them to rule, allow them to own it, and walk away. I know that, you know, a couple of years ago, as we began to evolve in our Kid Stuff ministry, that was, for me, one of the first things that I did here. And I love Kid Stuff. I love being with the families. I love being with the kids. And, you know, I would just always be a part of the creative meetings every Tuesday. Well, about 2 years ago, I just realized that I needed to back away from those creative meetings. And I needed to allow those leaders to continue to create and plan and dream. And sometimes they would simply have a wall and not develop and break through in their growth if I was continued to be in the mix. And so, you know, even last night we had this great retreat with Kid Stuff, and I showed up for about 30 minutes, talked to them about some ideas, and walked away. And they're there for 2 days. And sometimes it makes you nervous as a leader, but at the same time, if you don't let go, then they will never thrive and move to the challenge they need to move to.
When we started North Point, I did the host team training. That was the group that does our parking and bulletins and, you know, it's in the parking lot and, you know, basically greeting people. And I wanted to do it, and I was the only person that could do it at the time. I wanted to do it because I wanted to set the standard about how the training was done and the values that were implemented. At that time, I was really the only one that could do that. Well, a long time ago, I handed that off. And now when I look at the quality of what happens, it's far beyond where we were when we began. But at the same time, it was necessary for somebody to step in and set the standard. When we first started the church, I did all our small group training. I was the guy on Sunday afternoons. We got all our potential leaders and new leaders. I did that training. I loved doing it. Again, I felt like I needed to set the standard in terms of the content and what we did. But years ago, handed that off. And so, again, that's an advantage. When I see what happens in our small group ministries, when I hear about the quality of training, that's a win for me. It's something I don't have to do anymore. But at the same time, it's being done better than I would be able to do it now with my schedule and responsibilities. So I think as senior pastors, we need to constantly look for things we can hand off. But you don't just abdicate. You don't just say, well, I'm not doing that anymore. You've got to have somebody sitting out there watching you do it. You set the standard, and then you hand it off. And as Reggie said, you let it go.
There's another principle that's closely related to this, and it's simply this, that you don't own it anyway. In other words, there's just a mentality because we have created something or we've designed something that maybe it is ours. Well, ultimately, over time, you will not be in the picture. And what we have learned here in our culture, especially those of us working with youth and children, is that there's a next generation coming behind us that sometimes will have better ideas to reach the next generation. You know why? Because they are the next generation. And if we continue to force our ideas back downstream, ultimately we may create an organization that doesn't reach the next generation.
So really it comes down to three steps. Break it down, hand it off, and let it go. But we always talk, Andy, about one job that we really never let go of.
Yeah, the one responsibility we can never let go of is replacing ourselves. I mean, that's the forever thing. I'm constantly looking over my shoulder, constantly looking for people who can do the things I do and hopefully do them better. And that's the one responsibility we never let go. And again, you can't have too many people who are multipliers. When you find somebody who's willing to step out of a box, replace themselves and say, okay, now what else can I do? Or where else can I do this? You cannot have too many people like that in your organization. So that's the one responsibility we never completely hand off, replacing ourselves.
Andy and Reggie, I want to thank you guys for joining me today, and I want to thank those of you listening as well. If you'd like more information on the 7 practices of effective ministry, they're all detailed in a book from Multnomah Press, available at this website. For other resources from North Point Ministries, please go to northpoint.org.